Coming up this week, big news from Global as it prepares for national breakfast shows on Capital, Heart and Smooth. I'm also going to be talking to Talk Radio's Matthew Wright, 6 months into his job presenting the afternoon show. James Cridland asks why Australian commercial radio wants to stop people sharing its content online. And we've got more radio moments from David Lloyd.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
But first to the big story of the week. Radio Today's editor Roy Martin is here. Global has announced what we thought it would announce. Network breakfast shows are coming. Talk us through the details, Roy.
Well, where should we start? We thought we were busy last week with everything we were talking about, but this week, this is just another level. I think we're expecting network breakfast shows on one or two of the networks from Global. I don't think we were expecting all three to be announced at the same time and all three to be networked within months. So I'd say in about 6 months from now, all three, Capital, Heart and Smooth, in that order, will have a network breakfast show. So, yeah, you can imagine the amount of people that is going to be affected by this and how it's being labelled as Black Tuesday on the Twitter.
And 10 or 11 buildings closing as well. Again, that's a bit more than we thought it might be.
Well, if they merge the stations, of course, they don't need three buildings in a place that only has one output. So that kind of goes hand in hand, as sad as it is. And what's next? We're looking to Bauer now to maybe do the same thing. And if they do the same thing, they can do this, you know, three or four times bigger. So it's not going to be a good year for staff. The whole point of going forward with the radio industry, and this is good for radio because it's stabilizing the future and it's competing nationally and all that. That's a whole new different discussion, which hopefully we will touch on at some point in this podcast. So, yeah, so much to say, so little time to say it.
And a lot of hits on radio today, a lot of comments, a lot of reaction as well. So we'll talk about a bit of that later on. I want to bring in Dirk Anthony, though, former group content director at GCAP and GWR before it. Now a business consultant advising organisations on strategy and leadership and implementing new plans. Ideal for this story then. Hi, Dirk. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Roy. Hi, Stuart. How are you?
We're all right. A bit worn out after a busy week. But I mean, you were there at the early days of some of the networking that started. Reading what Global have announced they're going to do, what's your kind of initial reaction?
Well, the first reaction we'd all have to have is the impact on the people that are affected. The people that are sitting at home tonight talking to their families about, we've got redundancy notices, we are in consultation, we don't know what is going to happen, we can probably tell. So it's the people that we have to think about first, and you know, you can read it as you've said before on Twitter and on your website in the comments section, and it sounds pretty, it can come across as being, well, that's, of course, you've got to say that, but the reality around change, which is an area that I specialize in nowadays more than ever before, is that people are going through that first phase of the reality of what people have been worried about for some time, for their own livelihoods. So that's the first reaction. And I've had a phone call with some old colleagues of mine, not old as in age, but old as in some time ago when I worked with them. And one of them is sort of a little concerned about what that means in the future. And the other one is saying, well, look, you know, it's a push that I probably needed to do something else. But each individual and each family affected by this will certainly be going through a whole range of emotions right now tonight.
And the nature of some of these radio stations is that people have been there a long time, whether they're on air or off air. I know there are some of the breakfast shows that are going to be affected where people have been on air 20 plus years. So when you've been at a radio station that long, it takes a while for what's going to happen to sink in and for you to then start moving on and deciding what you're going to do with your life.
Yeah, and look, you know, I suppose all I could probably say is that I've been there when it was sort of about 9 years ago when I left GCAP, when sort of the way I describe it is the world changed. The recession hit the world. There was a change in leadership inside GCAP, and I was a part of that. I knew this was going to happen. We can all logically say we know it's going to happen, but like all of these things, when it actually does happen, you go through a range of, well, what am I going to do now? It doesn't matter who you are, whereabouts you are in any pecking order. You've got to go through that phase of, you know, what do I do now? And you're in that space where you're trying to work out what's going on for me. And you've got to move from that space into where you feel as though you've got some choices. And that right now, that's not where people will be thinking. Right now, it's about what am I going to do? What's happening, and some time just to sort of reflect on that.
I guess for you probably weren't in the building the following day after you knew you were going, whereas some of these people affected are going to have to keep going into work for possibly a few months, so that makes it a little bit more tricky.
Well, actually, I did actually work with Fru and the management team at GCAP for about 2 months after I was, we had the conversation. Okay. So but I think we had a culture at that point in the organization where you work to what are the objectives that need to be achieved, and it was a pretty grown up conversation. I had a sort of relationship with the people who are making these decisions. For a lot of people in this scenario, they don't have a relationship with the decision makers. This will feel a lot more like it was put on them, and they had no influence over this at all. So I think that that will be tough, and that will be a part of Global's approach to sort of managing this carefully. I'm sure the good managers amongst them will be working very, very hard to help people transition from where they currently are and go through that process. So that will remain to be seen. There'll be some, I'm sure there'll be some stories that aren't so good, but hopefully there'll be a lot of stories where people are being treated appropriately and carefully beyond the statutory approach. I'm sure that that will be the case in a number of places where I know managers are involved, and who are the good ones, and they'll do the best they can, I'm sure.
And as you say, Dirk, there's a lot of people going to be affected by this, and hopefully every individual person will have some kind of backup plan for their career in rail. It's always good to have a backup plan. It happened to me when Global bought GMG, and it bought Smooth originally, and I was lucky because I had Radio Today sort of bubbling away on the side. And when that happened, it gave me the kick I needed to put everything into Radio Today and do that full time, and it worked out okay so far. Touch wood. What else is there that radio people could do? What would you suggest? There are, podcasting and like yourself, you're into consultancy now. What else do you think presenters could do?
Well, I think presenters have got. There is no question that it's opening up lots of opportunities. I think that, and this will be cold comfort to people listening to this in the first few weeks of what's going on here. However, what I know for a fact from other people's experience and my own, a number of radio people who've gone on to run marketing businesses, who've gone on to work in schools, in other media outlets, the skills and the approach that radio gives us is very unique. We're always on, we are focused on the outcomes, we're focused on somebody else, the audience, primarily. Certainly the good radio people are. They're focused on customers. By and large, most people in radio are positive and actually really sort of open to sort of engage with other people to get a result. And I think that when you work in other businesses that aren't media or radio particularly, you don't get that sort of response. People are slower. People are can be slow, I should say. There can be in some traditional businesses, you'll find that you'll have an edge over somebody else because you'll be much more customer orientated, because we've got two sets of customers, advertisers and listeners, and we're trying to make sure that we provide both of them. So we're always looking for solutions. We're more creative. We're fast. We're 24/7. So there's a whole host of attitudinal things that people in radio have grown up with. We don't even realize how valuable that is. And when we apply them in other sorts of businesses, people who make hiring decisions will find that really, really valuable.
And onto the strategy of what Global are doing then, a lot of these stations that affect are stations that you programmed. Looking at the assets Global has got, and obviously they went through the rebranding a few years ago now, do you think they've done the right thing that they should be doing with these brands?
Well, I think from... I've said over the years, and I've been sort of out of radio as a full-time profession for a long time, and I've been an admirer of the strategy and the attention to detail and the dedication to focus on quality that Global have applied. And I think that they, and what I've said sort of, you know, in passing is that they're doing a lot of the things that we would have liked to have done if we had been privately owned. So strategically, I think that they have, they've played a blinder. They've done all the things that, and the reason I say that is not to take away from all the comments that we just spoke about, but from you got to take it in the context of the change that's going on in the world. The context is that we have got more digital offerings to take the attention away. You can sit in a car right now and you can look at a DAB radio that's got scores of radio stations you can choose from, and that's before 5G kicks in and provides a whole host of opportunities through, and I'm not talking about Spotify or, you know, it's the tune-in radios where you can open yourself up. So the choice that radio has to connect with audiences means that brands need to have a level of weight behind them, and the reality of what's going on in the world around us means that what Global are doing makes a lot of sense. Now, that again doesn't take away from the consequences on lots and lots of people as a result of this, but there is a change going on in the world, and at some point, radio for its survival, and in this country, radio is healthy. Local radio may have a different, people have a different view on that, but radio as a medium is certainly stronger today because of the private ownership that is occurring in this country than, you know, potentially in America. And so there's a from a strategic point of view, I understand, and I think most people probably do, and you recognise that the approach in terms of executing that strategy has, from an industry point of view, has been quite successful.
And I guess you probably had a variety of conversations with Ofcom or the Radio Authority when you were at GWR and GCAP. How much do you think that relationship between the groups and the regulator has changed in terms of Global and Bauer saying we'd like this and pushing and lobbying for it? Is it that way round, or is it actually Ofcom and government saying let's just be more relaxed in our approach to regulation?
I think it's I don't know about today. Back in the day, there was less of a quality relationship, I suppose. It was seen that the regulator then would have been trying to avoid a lot of the changes that we would have wanted to make. I don't know. I'm surmising. I would surmise that there is a reality that's occurring in media. The globalization of media has an impact. How do we keep a national media alive and well? How do we protect that and give that oxygen? And so I suppose it would be a pretty two-way street right now. There'll be conversations being had at the highest level between people saying, look, you know, this is an industry that needs support. How that support comes along. So the question is, will a whole host of small local radio stations be able to compete in 20 years' time against what's happening globally? And if the view is that that's possibly not going to work financially as well as from an audience perspective, then perhaps we need to have a different shape. It's an industrial revolution on a different scale in the media industry right now.
So obviously local radio appears to be dead if you look at the response on Twitter from this news. Do you think it was right to create the national brands whilst removing the local stations, or would you maybe rather have seen the national stations exist alongside the local stations, or is there only room for one?
Well, I don't know. My understanding back in the day was that the ability to create these sorts of frequencies was difficult. So inevitably, and I'm sure somebody who some of the technical experts out there would be able to answer that in a better way than I can. But from what I understand, we were in this country set with a dynamic around what sort of frequency availability we had, the radio stations that could be created as a result of that. I don't think how it started was really going to make a great deal of difference to how we ended up. Ultimately, what's happened in other parts of the world in terms of nationalizing product, it is a small island in the great scheme of things, and there are economies of scale which creates a healthy industry. I think it'll be interesting to see what effect it has on audiences. I mean, time will tell. Saw James Cridland wrote about something where, you know, in a country where local radio is very, very strong, in Australia where he now lives, that, you know, piping in some network programming actually enhanced audiences. Ultimately, the proof will be in the pudding. However, the reason why local radio probably will find it difficult to survive in each of the local markets is that there is it's the local revenue situation makes that tight. What happens now is that there will be other radio stations that are in some of the bigger markets, and you know, the test will be, can they survive? Can they derive enough revenue from that market? And the evidence is tough in markets like Manchester or in Bristol or in other parts, where even a local radio station in those markets with, you know, over 1 million people, they find it hard to drive enough revenue to create a quality product, which is tough. And that's ultimately, how do you afford to pay for a good quality output if the revenues in those local markets just don't allow that to happen?
I guess the revenues there in London, and this is interesting, just as we're talking, I've been sent a link to a petition that started in wake of the global announcements, calling on Ofcom to use the power it has to not automatically roll over Capital's FM license in London, because it's on DAB. It's got the power to obviously just roll on their FM license, but to pre-advertise it, so if anybody wants to say they're interested in it, they could have a full application process. That would throw the cat amongst the pigeons if Global had a challenger for 95.8.
Well, you know, and I suppose, you know, there will be lots of these sorts of moves to create some noise around this situation. You think the question is, you know, how realistic is that? What would be the ultimate outcome? Let's track that right through to the end of that whole sequence. How realistic is it that Ofcom would actually advertise that or pre-advertise it? How realistic is it that they would allow a process? If they did allow that process, how realistic is it that Global would lose the franchise, the license? You know, ultimately, I think, you know, those sort of things are going to happen, because that's what does happen. People allowed to have their voice and say what they feel about these things. I mean, ultimately, really what we're saying is, if the markets are changing and media is globalizing and we've got a number of choices for audiences in the future, how do we ensure that we can actually monetize? I think there's one key point that we need to think about, is that advertisers have a lot more choice on where they spend their advertising pounds. And whether you're a local advertiser, you can, with small amounts of money, have some impact in your own advertising campaigns through all of the social media outlets. So when you're a radio station trying, and I worked with, you know, some small local radio stations and with their sales teams in the last 18 months, helping sales teams come up with reasons why local advertisers, local car yards or you know, the local real estate agent, why they should spend money with a radio station rather than run some Facebook campaigns. You know, this is a real world out there where advertisers are walking to other advertising mediums. So this is not just about Global or Bauer or anybody else making decisions because they want to make life difficult for, you know, radio people. There are some changes that are going on in the industry, and if they leave these changes too late, they will have a weakened industry. Now, the moral dilemma around this is not really for me to sort of speculate, just to be able to say that there is a change going on in the world globally. There is a change going nationally around media, and the idea is to have a healthy radio industry. Unfortunately, what's happened today for a lot of people is that has a direct impact on their lives, and that is something that is difficult, whether you see the logic of the change that needs to happen or not.
You mentioned the local ads will continue, of course. The local competition still there, providing local radio at the moment in Bower. The million-dollar question today is, do you think Bower will follow suit?
Well, I noticed on the Radio Today website, the comment from Bower was, we don't comment on speculation. So I think if they're not going to comment, it's going to be a bit hard for me. What do I know? I think that if I was to have a guess about how the world will end up in 5 years, I think the UK will be full of national brands competing for revenues from other national brands. They will try and be able to top up with local revenues, but it will be a national market. I think that's how I think it will work out. It may be that that there's a different strategy from the competition. And it may be that there are some licenses in some of the larger conurbations that are able to survive on some local revenues. But I think the 80-20 principle, 80% of the radio market will be national. And then there'll be some players who can actually derive a good business model from local markets.
And you're obviously doing well for yourself outside of radio, but the passion that you've got for it is still evident and coming across. Could you ever see yourself coming back to UK radio?
Well, I think I could see myself coming back. I don't think anyone else can. I love it. I think I absolutely love the medium. I think it's fantastic. But I think that it's a much smaller industry today, and there are a lot of people who I used to work with who were starting out in their careers who've got themselves some pretty senior positions in the radio groups now, and they're doing an amazing job. So I sort of do some work for various people here and there in terms of coaching around leadership and how you get the best out of talent. I work with people outside of radio, and I tend to explain my time in radio as where I spent my time protecting the suits from the creatives and protecting the creatives from the suits. That seemed to be the role that I had.
Well, thank you very much for coming on, and I think people listening will be fascinated to hear your views on the situation.
Thanks very much for having me. Appreciate it.
Fascinating insight from Dirk. And if you've missed any of the details, if you're listening to this thinking, what on earth has happened? It's all on radiotoday.co.uk, of course. But if we can go through some facts and figures, basically Global is putting out national breakfast shows on Heart, Capital and Smooth within the next 6 months. April the 8th is the date for Capital, which is only 6 weeks off, if that. And 2BR in Lancashire is going to be networked with Capital Manchester. It'll share a drive time show. So that must only have a few weeks left of 2BR, and then Capital is Coming will start airing.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before when Global bought it. Obviously, both of us in the early days of our careers worked at 2BR as well. So seeing that name disappear will be sad for us, but life moves on.
Yeah, and I set up the B, which was obviously merged into 2BR, which was a sad moment, realistic but sad, and now the whole thing is being disappeared and merging into Capital. So it's going from one extreme to the other. And interestingly, Capital Liverpool will keep a drive time show,
and they don't need to do that. Global don't need to do that in terms of the regulations.
No, they don't need to do that. And I noticed in the format change, which appeared online about half an hour after all this was announced on Tuesday morning, that it does have permission to share with the Lancashire licenses and the Manchester license. So maybe they're keeping Liverpool. Liverpool is a very big Bower city, because there's three Bower stations at the top of the tower. So yeah, maybe they need to claw back a bit of audience before they network it. And there's little things like Smooth Lake District, which is owned by Global, but it's going to be sharing programmes with Smooth Northwest, which is Communicore. Ah. And there are ways around it, of course. If Communicore becomes the programme supplier for the Lake District, then they're still in control of the licence because Global own it. So there's little things like that which are quite interesting. Obviously not interesting for the staff right now because they've all been given bad news. But when you look into the nitty-gritty, it gets interesting.
Yeah, around Wales is quite interesting as well. Obviously in North Wales, on the North Wales coast, the old Coast FM and Champion 103, as the licences were back in the day, in Carnarvon and Anglesey. There are, on the formats, there are some requirements to do Welsh language and play Welsh music. And I don't think there's been a format change to change that, because that would be a substantial alteration of character of service. So they're able to take programmes from London 21 hours a day, but it seems like there will still be a requirement of the licence to broadcast some things in Welsh and include some Welsh music. So that's going to be an interesting one to follow.
The format just says a bilingual service. So they could have a three-hour Welsh drive time show instead of the current 7 hours or 10 hours they do at the moment on that frequency. So they could just condense it. I don't think it mentions how many hours a day they need to do, but you know, a two-hour local news bulletin Welsh and a three-hour Welsh drive time show, then box ticked, I think, on that one.
Yeah, and we've got obviously a number of sites closing, which is going to impact on more than on-air and production staff. There might be engineering jobs going and kind of receptionists and that kind of stuff, and possibly even some sales roles. We don't know the extent of it at the moment. So Brighton, Cambridge, Chelmsford, Exeter, Gloucester, Kendal, Kent, Lancaster, Norwich, Swindon, and we also think Burnley, Blackburn area, and Cornwall, all those are going to close. So it focuses Global's efforts on some key broadcast centres in each region. They're also keeping Nottingham for non-broadcast stuff, where I think they do a lot of the Comprod, and Communicore will do their local shows from Nottingham for the East Midlands, and Reading, which I think is a kind of finance processing centre and stuff that they do in the old 210 building. So big changes to buildings, not just the on-air output, but actually the way that Global is run as a company across the UK is going to change quite significantly. Yeah. We've heard from Ashley, who's saying obviously it's bold steps, significant operational changes, but this is about competing with Radio 1 and Radio 2 at breakfast, and that's a huge opportunity. And you know, you can't argue with that kind of sentiment of what he wants to do with his brand.
He's getting so much stick on Twitter. Some of the I'll not read out some of the sticks, but just having a quick look at some of the reactions. I've had to turn my notifications off on Twitter today for the
my phone's been
today
going crazy.
Account.
Yeah,
every 20 seconds there's been a reply to it, so I've turned it off. We've got a few here. Fiona Jane Sadler says, "I adore radio. It's all I've ever wanted to do, but today is a very sad day. Love to my ex-Global and Communicore friends affected by the changes." Graham Park says, "Less opportunity for new radio talent and lots of talented people out of a job." Chris Pitcher says, "I'm only surprised it took this long." Steve Mowbray says, "Tail wagging the dog. This should never have been allowed. It's the listener who loses out to this. Global putting profit before quality," which I don't fully agree with. I don't think the listeners will lose out, because there'll still be local information, local news and all the important stuff. And I think the quality will still be there. The Kendal MP, Tim Farron, is not happy. He says, "A total betrayal, not only for the brilliant presenters, producers and journalists that will lose their jobs, but for the communities who rely on local commercial radio to keep in touch with what's going on in their area." And it goes on. One person on the Facebook story just replied with, "Arseholes," which was quite tame.
Was that aimed at us? Was that aimed at us, was it?
I'm not sure. It could well have been. You never know. We do get quite a lot of flack these days. It could have been anybody.
I did a bit of number crunching after the announcements as well, and looked at, obviously, what Bauer could potentially do. And as Dirk said, Bauer, don't comment on the speculation. But we've looked at all the stations that they own and the ones they've acquired recently, added that to Global's changes, and our figures show more than 250 on-air presenter voices are likely to be lost from UK commercial radio. So these are big numbers, and you know, that line's been picked up by a few other media outlets as well. So we did that not to kind of, you know, say, oh look, whatever, and be kind of trying to highlight the people losing a job, but it was more about showing the scale of what these changes by Ofcom actually mean in reality. It remains to be seen what Bauer will do. They might not go to the full extent that Global have, and historically they haven't gone as far as Global have in terms of those national brands and what they do with their licenses, but it is going to be a kind of case of watch this space. I think the purchases they made really do show they want to compete with Global on a national scale for advertising. So whether they do that with brands on some of these FM stations that they've recently bought, then we'll have to watch and see.
And we must emphasise that even though those numbers are there, a lot of those people affected will stay with the company. They'll just do different roles, so they'll be redeployed back into different sites. Or I've heard that each site will still have a breakfast producer and a station producer just to oversee things and make sure things are working in the local areas. So there will be some people stay. Not everybody, the presenters obviously will be leaving their breakfast shows. Some might go on to Drive, which means the Drive Time show host then is made redundant. So we don't know who's going where yet. I doubt personally they will put a triple header breakfast show team on a Drive show, but one of those people may go to Drive and the Drive guy or girl leave. We just don't know, and that will all become apparent, I think, in the future. Just talking of dates, I think April the 8th is the day for Capital. We've been told that June would be the date that Heart goes national, and then Smooth will follow a couple of months later, maybe August, September. So, yeah, by the end of summer, it's probably all going to be done and dusted.
And as a former commercial radio journalist and worked in newsrooms in GWR and GMG, I'm interested in what the local news requirement is and what it will sound like on these stations. Obviously, being able to drop to 3 hours of local, in inverted commas, programmes for each licence and hubbing those across regions. In return for that, Ofcom wants this enhanced local news service. And it's difficult to work out what that actually means. Ofcom's quite clear in its guidance that it shouldn't be box ticking, and that enhanced daytime bulletins should be more than just headlines. They should have fully formed local news story in them, which is, copy and clip. And they also say, interestingly, that where stations are sharing local hours with an approved area and broadcasting the same bulletin across multiple licensed areas, at least one of the local stories in each bulletin needs to be directly relevant to listeners in each of the licensed areas. So that means if you've got, eight licenses that make up one station now, and you're doing one bulletin for that, then there's got to be eight separate local news items relevant to each area in each hour's news. So that's more than a one-minute update.
That is what it says. So at that point, it'll be interesting to see whether they do eight split bulletins or four split bulletins and just have two stories, one for each particular town. Who's monitoring that? Ofcom are very, reactive rather than proactive. So it's going to be down to people making complaints, isn't it, as to how long they will, whether they will get away with, getting it wrong or purposely not doing exactly what they should be doing.
Yeah, and this was what we said with Martin Campbell last week, wasn't it, really? The opposition isn't necessarily going to report Global if the opposition is Bauer and they don't want to have to do it either. So, yeah, I think for me that's the thing, because all this programme sharing is possible in the trade-off that you are going to enhance your local news provision or provide an enhanced service. So I think that's going to be key, and certainly from my point here at Radio Today, I'll be checking what they're doing. So we'll be watching you, Global and Bauer.
And it's a far cry from a local radio station with a local news team of three or four people in every day, two people on the desk, one out reporting and, whatever, to having one person just sorting out press releases. That's pretty much what it's down to, sadly. So, yeah.
Right, well, I think we've waffled on quite long enough. We've got more to come on this podcast still, including David Lloyd and James Cridland. And Matthew Wright is coming up next. I spoke to him earlier in the day. It's a nice interview with Matthew, actually, that you'll enjoy, and hopefully have you giggling a little bit. He's got an infectious laugh. Good. So hopefully
we
that'll
need
put
a laugh.
We need to put a smile on your face. And I'll leave you with Andrea's final thought from our friend Andrea on Twitter. Today she said, "Radio people, you are creative, dynamic and awesome. Today's news is sad, especially for the hundreds who have their livelihoods affected. The changes don't make anyone less creative, dynamic and most importantly, awesome."
Your best content, shareable and discoverable on any platform. Oasis from Broadcast Bionics helps you build a closer relationship with your listeners. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
This is the Radio Today programme. James Cridland and David Lloyd still to come. But next, let's speak to a relative newcomer to the radio industry. Matthew Wright left Channel 5's The Right Stuff after 18 years last summer. And in September, he joined Talk Radio to do the afternoon show. Now 6 months into daily radio, I asked him how it's been so far.
After 18 years of doing the telly, and you sort of felt my way initially, yeah. I think, what can you do? And you can't just ram, in my view, you can't just ram the heavy stuff down people's throats unrelentingly. You've got to sweeten the pill. And I like the left field and the curious and the diverse and even the occasionally the perverse. And I think there's room for all of it in an afternoon radio show. And all the flavours of life brought together. And I'm really pleased that we've actually managed to, I think, keep the sort of old Right Stuff atmosphere going to some degree on the airwaves. So I think having some of the strong women from back in the day, Yasmin Alibi Brown, we've got Dawn Butler now, a Labour front bencher every Monday, I think that really helps.
And 6 months now you've been doing it. Listening figures are doing all right as well, aren't they?
Yes. The first rage hours, and I know because the bosses were desperate for me to start on the 1st of September, but for various reasons, mainly my own mental health, I couldn't get going until the 10th of September. But the boss gave me some, as you said, 22% up on the quarter, 55% up on the year. I'll take that, thank you very much. I really will. I think it's a fantastic start for us, and I've really got high hopes for the future.
And there was this thing when you started, because you're on with Kev O'Sullivan, who you've known a long time, and there was this a bit of talk when you got together on Talk Radio, two white men on the radio, is that going to work?
Yes.
But you get lots of female guests on and lots of pundits, don't you?
I mean, again, from it was informed from my years on television that I personally am interested in a more diverse media, and I was given the chance to experiment with it really on Channel 5, and I'm delighted, you know, people with different abilities in, whether it be wheelchair users or amputees, missing limbs, it really doesn't matter, women, anything, I don't care. I want all of life's characters on the show. What was interesting was you're quite right picking up on it, you're two middle-aged white blokes. I guess, to one hand, that's a credit to Talk Radio. They were prepared to continue exploring, I suppose, the things that one might argue have been tried and tested, you know, middle-aged white men. There's plenty of them on radio. I guess, though, as media moves to become more diverse, the sound of two middle-aged white men on the radio is going to become increasingly rare. And I think that by harnessing both the skills that Kevin and I have developed over the years in newspapers, I mean, Kevin's been in newspapers pretty much since Caxton started printing, and I did some time as well. I think ultimately what we've got is a very, 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 very sound journalistic base from which we can then bring in all manner of guests from as diverse a range as possible, and let the show flow from there. I think from a good journalistic base you can do anything, and I think that's what we're proving.
And you've got a good mix of the serious stuff and a lot of politics, obviously, at the moment, as well as the lighter things and the celebrity guests and that kind of stuff.
I think there was a degree of, not concern, a degree of anticipation, really, about how the show would play out. Because I think, broadly speaking, Talk Radio from breakfast through till drive has ploughed a... sort of faithfully addressing the big issues of the day, quite a lot of highbrow politics at breakfast and throughout the day, and I was just very keen. I felt there was room in the schedule, particularly in the afternoons, to just lighten the mood a little, as I said, to sort of sweeten the pill of hard news. And you know, quite frankly, if I was doing Brexit 3 hours a day every day, I'd have probably gone by now, because I don't think my own brain could stand it. It's a story that's very important, but it has its peaks and it has its troughs. Now, I think I've done three occasions now. We've been down live from College Green outside Parliament, all the major MPs going up and down. We bring them into the Talk Radio marquee, which is a massive exaggeration for a piece of raggedy cloth draped over a few buckled aluminium poles and a heater plugged outside. I mean, explain that to me. But we do it there. there, and it's because it's important we cover that big moment, those big stories. But the rest of the time, there's plenty of room. Today we did nearly an hour on knife crime with interested parties. You know, you've got the House of Lords, they're going to be debating knife crime control orders. But it was really interesting to hear from, you know, the mother of someone who'd been killed in a knife crime, from politicians and from campaigners, to hear their views. And it becomes a much more sort of human story, a much more real story, much more tangible, perhaps, than the toings and froings, the shenanigans in Westminster on Brexit.
And do you find it easier tackling those stories on radio rather than kind of TV work, where you've got the tyranny of pictures? Yes, you can have a panel there debating stuff, but you've got to find images and things to go with stories.
You've got me thinking, because actually right now I would say it's the opposite for me, because I was so trained in thinking in pictures that as I address any story, I automatically see the images in my head and then try and make them fit. But in radio, you've got to create pictures using sound. And that requires a little bit more ingenuity. Now, I have done radio before. I've been on BBC and on another talk radio station a few years back, and I sort of dipped my fingers in, so I was quite excited about the prospect of, you know, using the listener's imagination, really. And we had a wonderful moment last week. What were we talking about? Thursday's Curiosity Corner, where we interview somebody who does an extremely unusual, even rarefied activity. Last week was the Sealed Knot Society, and I thought, how do we encompass, you know, fully grown men in medieval costume charging towards each other with huge swords? And I thought, well, how do we do that on the radio? Well, option one was to get a large sword and hit Kevin with it repeatedly, but health and safety wouldn't let us do that. So then we thought, well, we would just use imaginary swords and get some sound effects of swords hitting. So I was going, and then there'll be a sound clank of the sword, and then Kevin clank, and it was hilarious. I mean, I hope the listeners enjoyed it as much as we did making it. But I love the idea that there's a whole extra layer of creativity that I think you can get on radio that maybe you don't get on television, where you have to conjure pictures in people's imaginations. I love it.
And you mentioned the bits of radio that you'd done before. You used to sit in for Steve Wright, I think. Did you on radio too?
Yeah. My dad, as I used to say. Famously, I loved it. He came up, it was probably the best backhanded compliment I've ever had in radio. And he came up to me at a Radio 2 Christmas party and said, do you know what I like about your show, son? I go, what's that, Dad? He goes, it's not very slick. And by that he means, I don't do loads of...
That's when you were doing it live rather than pre-recording.
Exactly. I didn't do any pre-records. I didn't edit out all my ums and ahs and edit in the applause or the old lady. No, I was just winging it. It's not very slick. Thanks, Steve.
And on your TV show, I think people like James O'Brien and Amol Rajan started out on there as well.
So you've discovered
these people who are big in the radio world now as well.
Yes, I'm very proud of Amol Rajan, I have to say, because he started as the most junior, and it was very obvious he had a very, very quick brain and a natural aptitude in television, actually. And I could feel he'd outgrown his role wrangling the audience for comments, and he said, I'd like to do something else. He said, I'd really like to move into newspapers, and it was my privilege to help set him up with then Simon Kellner, the then editor of The Independent, and the next thing I know, Amol was editor of The Independent. So he's left me in his shade.
And when the time came to move on, and a lot's been written and said about you leaving your Channel 5 show, but you obviously had a little break from it. What was it that made you want to come to Talk Radio?
Talk Radio had actually probably planted the seeds of my departure without knowing it. I was first, Denny, our boss here, Denny Morris, first class governor, I have to say. He first tapped me up for Talk Radio. Where are we now, Mark? So it had been, nearly 2 years ago.
Wow, okay.
And at the time, it was suggested that I might be able to do the right stuff, leave, get a bike over to Talk Radio Towers. Actually, we're moving into lovely new studios in mm-hmm. May, but at the moment down to Waterloo, and do a three-hour radio show. And I just weighed it all up, and I thought, if I do that, I'm going to end up in an early grave. It's just too much, which is ironic when you consider what replaced me at Channel 5. More than that, I'd had a good run, 18 years on television, 18 years getting up at 3:30 in the morning, 18 years of writing all the scripts, driving most of the ideas. I think people thought it was all done for me, but I led everything there. And I think by the end of it, I got pretty burnt out, just wasn't enjoying it anymore. And the show was moved from one production company to another. A lot of people I worked with for a long time were made redundant. And I think if I have any regrets at all, it was that I didn't leave at that time, which was Christmas rather than June. It was a good run while it lasted, but it's a whole lot more fun here at Talk Radio, I have to say.
And you've not watched Jeremy on it yet, I guess.
I genuinely don't have the chance, because by the time he's on, I'm already prepping for today's show, or the afternoon show here on the radio, and travelling across town. But I wish him well.
So you obviously mentioned the move into the News UK building,
yeah,
later this year. Is it going to be exciting being back in the building where the sun is and all that newspaper work?
Now, I have to answer that question. My own personal feelings are right now, for some bizarre reason, I like the current studios. I like watching the moths hatch in our rancid carpet. I like the toilet without the toilet seat, which disappeared some while ago. I like the fact that it's got a
Fabio
real...
Fabio at the canteen.
Well, yeah. In fact, marvellous chicken we had today. Marvellous spicy chicken with couscous. How incredibly media. It's just got a feeling here of the sort of underdog fighting, and I love that atmosphere. It's what sort of turned me on at Channel 5. You start, people don't know where you are, and you fight and fight and fight, and you claw your way into the public consciousness. So I like the atmosphere here. I've worked in big corporate offices before. My last stay at Channel 5 at ITM was very corporate. I'm not really a corporate kind of a guy, but it has to be said that the new studios are the business. I mean, at the moment, we've got sort of pretty basic TV cameras within studios, and it's a real struggle to edit up any kind of packages at all for the listeners. And it's worth pointing out now that video clips of either teasing what material you've got coming up in the afternoon or clips from the show do incredibly well for us online, and they help drive an audience to the show. The new studios are basically TV studios with microphones in them. So we'll still be doing a radio show, but it will be all bells and whistles, full on sort of television editing as we go along. There'll be many more clips going live as we're on air, and hopefully more teasers as well. So it's a very exciting time, in as much as I should be able to combine, Stuart, both my visual skills developed on television over 18 years with my newfound oral skills. Oral.
You'll have to worry about the hair again.
Yeah.
Not saying you've
very
let it go,
point.
But...
Yes, I have let it go. But I'm entitled to let things go just a little, because I did do the 18 years of being the Sergeant Major. Because at the end of the day, I suppose, when you're doing early morning, whether it be breakfast radio, and I know Julia Hartley Brewer feels exactly the same, you've got to come in and you've got to energise not just your team to get them at their very best, but you've got to put on a show that energises the listeners, energises the nation. And it takes its toll. So after 18 years of having very neat haircuts from Trevor Sorby and Covent Garden, a governor he is, yeah, I thought, bugger it, let it go, bleach it a bit, look like a hippie. I did my hello spread with the missus when our baby was born, Cassidy, and then this massive viral thread on the celebrities I most look like. Julian Clary, number one, Shirley from EastEnders, number two, hey, Michael Ball. It was dreadful, dreadful.
You take it all in your stride.
I'm seeing them behind, the producers are all laughing at me from behind the glass screen. I am going to get it cut, Stuart, I promise.
But, I mean, the investment that News are putting in, obviously, to the new studios and to Virgin, yeah, with Chris Evans starting, it's a good place to be in radio at the moment.
Well, I mean, you're asking this on the day that Global has really announced very bad news in terms of its breakfast coverage. You know, I would have thought that the more different voices you hear on radio, the better for the radio industry that would be. Global's taken a different approach. I think with speech-based radio, there's some very clear signposts which may indicate why it's so attractive to the likes of Rupert Murdoch. I think we're in a very difficult time politically. I think it's very obvious that the general public demands and seeks out... they want help and they want answers. They want explanation. And I don't think there's ever been such a strong demand for that in my lifetime. And, you know, some of the other speech-based radio stations are doing a cracking job on that. At the same time, the traditional big speech-based stations, your Radio 4s and your Radio 5 Lives, they look like they're running into problems to me. I think Radio 5 Live maybe has always struggled to find an audience, but Radio 4, they appear to be... I don't know, maybe at a crossroads. There's a lot of angst within the BBC. Maybe they're trying to work out where their direction is going to be. And I think it'll be interesting when John Humphreys goes from today, whether we'll see some kind of reform of Radio 4 as he goes out the door. Still some time away. So I think there's never been a better time to be in speech radio. I think the audience is demanding, as I said, more explanation, more comment from people on these difficult issues like Brexit. And at the same time, the big beasts appear to be to have let their guard down. So great opportunities for someone like me who loves to be the underdog.
And if you could pick any guest to come on your show one afternoon, who would it be?
Gosh.
Putting you on the spot.
Gosh, because I would love to do all our political leaders, and I think that will happen in time. Top of my list at the moment, if I'm absolutely honest, is Jeremy Corbyn. I feel he's given a, broadly speaking, very unfair treatment by most of the mainstream media, and it's very difficult for him to get his message out if all the newspapers are run by mainly right-wing non-doms. I want to hear what his plans actually are, unfiltered, rather than, as we currently receive them, all filtered through the mainstream media. So he would be top of my list. Theresa May, that would be interesting, although I don't know. I'd much rather meet Jeremy Corbyn. And then, of course, there's all my weird left field interests as well. I'm still, to be absolutely honest, who would have thought that Britain's champion stone tosser would have been such an interesting interview? But he was a stone skimmer. And I think ordinary people with great stories, in many ways, can be just as interesting to the listener as very famous people with maybe slightly dull stories. And hearing this guy, I said, well, what attributes do you need to be a champion tosser? And he said, well, yeah, you strong, big, strong hands. I said, well, so what about Donald Trump? He said, oh, he'd be a useless tosser. I couldn't, if I'd had all the money in the world and all the time in China, I couldn't have written him a better line than that one. I'd like all the major political figures in, all the party leaders, but without doubt, we've got to keep all the weirdos in too, the normal weirdos, especially the ones in Westminster.
And there was a time, finally, on your TV show where it's probably fair to say you got a lot of complaints at one point. There were various things going on, whether it's stuff you said or guests had said.
Yeah.
How is the difference in radio? Have you had any complaints yet at Talk Radio? And do you feel like you can say what you want a bit more than you could on TV?
Oh, I definitely feel I can say what I want. There were moments in Channel 5 when I felt completely undermined in editorially and unsupported. And that I discussed in advance with Talk Radio, and that is not going to happen here.
Excellent. And in terms of your own radio listening habits, what else do you listen to other than the brilliant programmes on Talk Radio, of course?
Julia Hartley Brewer, I start my day with her, if only because it makes me angry enough to get out of bed and take on the day, Stuart. She's absolutely true, because I don't agree with a single thing she says on the radio, and yet I really like her. It's a lovely lady.
A lot of speech radio presenters in Talk Radio, I'm talking about Talk Radio and LBC really, quite right of centre, and your politics are probably a little bit left of centre. So do you feel like a bit of a loner in that respect? Obviously, James O'Brien's on your wavelength a bit.
Well, James has gone down the sort of single issue. He's a single issue radio show, and he's very good at it because he's had a lot of experience talking about Brexit, because he talks about absolutely nothing else. People say I'm left of centre at the moment because we've got Dawn Butler on regularly. We're hoping to have Ed Vasey, a Tory backbencher, on regularly. I would actually describe myself as almost apolitical. I don't know what my political feelings are, because every time I think, well, maybe I feel like this, I can think out of a completely contradictory thought, which is both the blessing and the curse of being brought up by a Thatcherite father and a neo-Marxist mother who didn't agree on anything at all any of the time. So I'm rather peculiar. People think they know what my politics are, but I suspect if they do, they know more about it than I myself. I'm cynical. I have a great distrust of all politicians. I treat them all equally, I'd like to think. It's just interesting, trying to give people a fair crack of the whip. That seems to be the hardest thing at the moment.
In terms of your Talk Radio future, do you see yourself still there in 18 years?
18 years might be pushing it. I've got a new baby daughter to
entertain. Yes, congratulations on that.
Thank you. And I've made no secret about it that at this stage of my life, coming up 54, I didn't live the first 54 years of my life with an ambition to raise children or be around for any particular long time. Now she's here, I'd like to dedicate a significant part of my remaining years on this earth to her. So I would think I'll be on talk radio for a few more years yet to come, and then I'm going to go and retire and become a full-time baby father and let the wife do the work instead.
Well, good to catch up with you, Matthew, and hope you get some warm days on College Green, because it looks a bit chilly in December.
Oh, my word. We've always got Mike Graham to cuddle up to, and there's plenty of him.
Thanks, Matthew.
Bless you, Stuart. Thank you.
That was fun, wasn't it? That was Matthew Wright talking to me here on the Radio Today programme. James Cridland on the way. Just a quick word first about Clean Feed, if you've not tried it yet. And I know some people have been tweeting me this week to tell me that they have and they love it. If you're doing an OB from somewhere different to normal, or maybe getting a guest on from down the line and you want them in better quality, Clean Feed is great. It's been designed for radio and for podcasters, and it's really simple to use and connect live audio over the web in great quality. It won't cost you anything to get started. Just take you 30 seconds to get signed up, and within minutes you'll be doing your first live interview or hosting that show from somewhere different. You can find out more at cleanfeed.net.
I'm James Cridland, the radio futurologist.
Yes, Adelaide is fast becoming a big and important city. And yet from King William Street, the heart of Adelaide, you're not far from the sea. You can drive there in a quarter of an hour, and those beaches are well worth seeing.
Ah, Australia. And in a submission to government this week, Commercial Radio Australia, the Australian equivalent of the UK's Radio Centre, has asked for, among other things, a legal requirement that websites and apps should remove links to live radio streams and podcasts if the radio stations ask them to. The reason given is that other places might link to live streams or to podcasts, and therefore people won't visit radio station websites anymore. And therefore radio companies will lose out on the revenue from ad banners on those websites. Well, is this a good idea? Not really. First, there's no need to get government involved in the first place. If you don't want other people linking to your live streams, well, you can protect them. Just ask Netflix, Spotify, or even Apple's Beats One. If you don't want others listening to your podcasts, just remove the RSS feed and nobody will be able to link to your podcasts anymore. Technology to protect streams and files has been available for at least 20 years. We really don't need to bother government with it. Secondly, for an ad-funded platform, it's absolutely the wrong strategy to limit your potential audience. Your main goal should be to get more listeners to your ad-funded content. That's kind of how it works. Thirdly, podcasting in particular works by a podcaster publishing an RSS feed. And this feed is published deliberately to help other websites and apps to find individual episodes without formal permission being given. The whole point and success of podcasting is that it's open. So to bring legal protection against people linking to your podcast without permission is dangerous for the entire medium. And anyway, permission from the content owners is an interesting one. The content owners of much of radio's output are the record companies, not the radio stations. And the record companies, particularly here, are in perpetual fights with broadcast radio. And we'll be delighted to learn that you've handed them a way to switch off your internet streams. Commercial Radio Australia's press release seems like a scattergun list of issues. Everything from better ad measurement and asking for less regulation and asking for more regulation and asking for money. But the legal requirements about links to streams and especially to podcasts are dangerously misguided. And they display a fundamental misunderstanding of how the medium works. So just count yourself lucky today that you're not in Australia. You can get my weekly newsletter at james.crid.land and daily podcast news at podnews.net. And until next time, keep listening. And now on the Radio Today programme, here's the definitely not Australian David Lloyd. Radio
Moments. Presenters are told they're going to move slots aren't always too happy. These changes didn't go down too well at BBC Radio Oxford 2 years ago.
I'm really sad to tell you that after 2 years presenting this show and trying to make it the very best it can be, a show with hopefully a likeable personality, one that doesn't take itself too seriously, a programme that still gives you all the news and information that you expect, but above all, a show that is about you, the audience, the people who ultimately matter. But unfortunately, it appears that's not enough, certainly in the view of our temporary managing editor anyway. But I'm massively
Howard Bentham doing a DLT this week in 2017. But one thing you must do is wish your successor all the best.
from next Monday, David Prever is going to be sitting in as the permanent host of the show. I genuinely wish David all the best and a safe drive in from St Albans of a morning. I'm going to be playing musical chairs.
Howard is now on drive. Murray Firth, Inverness, was one of the smallest stations in the UK at the time it launched this week, 37 years ago.
Good morning. It's Tuesday the 23rd of February, 1982, and welcome to the very first day of broadcasting from your new independent local radio station. This is Murray Firth Radio on 271 metres, 1107 kHz in the medium wave band, and on 95.9 MHz VHF in stereo.
And Murray Firth's anniversary is a rather good excuse to play this classic moment.
Now then, Len is out with the radio car this morning in Forres.
I'm at Lee and Coyle Hospital, just on the edge of Forres. And I'm sitting beside Jimmy Innes, who is 100 today. Amazing. We've just opened the telegram from the Queen. Jimmy, how do you feel this morning, now that you're 100? How do you feel? How do you feel this morning? You're 100 today. You're looking very well. Are you keeping fine? That's good. You've just opened your telegram from the Queen. Did you think you would get it? You got the military medal in 1916. Do you remember that? Do you remember getting the military medal in 1916?
That sort of thing's happened quite a few times on British radio, hasn't it? Do you remember that famous Radio Derby, OB?
Hello again, and this week, remember when Hez, for the first time, travelled out of the studio, and by means of the radio car, the programme is coming to you from the Queen Victoria Memorial Home of Rest on Wealden Avenue in Derby. With me here, in what is known as a quiet room, are quite a few of the residents and members of staff. So let's hope we manage to get a word with everyone and do justice to the many memories that they must have. Let's move on now to the lady at your side, who's just put her knitting away. What a shame. Miss Beeston. You put your knitting away, Miss Beeston. Are you a little fed up of your knitting? I must explain that Miss Beeston will be 100 years old in October, and Miss Beeston also is a little bit hard of hearing.
I do know I can't hear.
Let me speak a little louder to you then, because I've been told you were born in Tissington.
You've been told what?
That you were born in Tissington.
Oh, yes.
They must have been very happy times for you.
Oh, they were. Oh, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yes, a lesson in the power of the open question, not least to old folk. Now, those interviewees would have been running around in the playground when the General Forces programme came on air this week, 75 years ago.
This is the General Forces programme presenting Radio Newsreel, General Overseas Edition number 43.
This week in 1944, the BBC Forces programme became the General Forces programme, the precursor to the Light programme and then Radio 2. The countdown continues until Simon Mayo peels off the cellophane from his new studio chair at Scala, but this week, 33 years ago, he was picked up from local radio obscurity for his first Radio 1 show.
Simon Mayo through till 3 o'clock today, and Gary did say, please make your bit in the middle as much like mine as possible, except not quite as brown.
I'd done absolutely nothing on Radio 1 at all, and the first thing they asked me to do was to do the lunchtime show for 2 weeks, which you'll remember at the time, on Tuesday lunchtime, you had to announce the chart. I mean, it was just a huge thing. It was Gary Davis's programme, and this is the way they blooded you in those days. They go, right in, none of this kind of will give you the midnight till 4 slot or anything like that. So I went straight in from doing mornings on Radio Nottingham to doing lunchtimes on Radio 1, and it was truly the most terrifying, scary thing I have done. I mean, I sat there in the studio on my own with everything all lined up and ready to go, and it was Talking Heads, and she was the first track, I remember it, and I needed to get that first voiceover right, you know. It was very easy to mess up, and the fact that I had one go at it, really. It was quite easily, I could have done 2 weeks and then never be heard of ever again.
Simon Mayo's debut on Radio 1. And for the record, I think most people knew what you really meant when you were quoted recently. Paddy Feeney hosted Junior Choice on Radio 1 until this weekend in 1968. And then came the programme's most famous voice of all. Hello, darling.
OK, you're sharing this next record now with our first tape request from the Lancasters.
Hi, Ed.
Hello.
I'm Elizabeth Lancaster, aged 12.
And I'm James Lancaster, aged 8.
We live at
Low. Those tape requests by the mid-70s sent in by listeners on cassette. But before that, they used to send them in on bits of quarter-inch tape.
Swanny Wally and Under the Moon of Love, and thank you, everybody, for your tape and cassette requests today. They've been lovely. We've got some more tomorrow. And if you feel you'd like to make a tape up for us... actual fact, if it's a really good tape, you sometimes have more chance of getting that played than you do with the cards, because we get an awful lot of cards, of course, and we do like to hear the tape requests as well as the cards.
Ed Stewart, who took over Radio 1's Junior Choice this week in 1968, and he was there until 1980 when Tony Blackburn took over. As we prepare for the departure of John Humphreys from Radio 4's Today programme, let's remember it's now 25 years since Jim Nocte joined, but he took that first broadcast a little more seriously than this one.
Bright or sunny, showers in Wales and the West Country, not very windy.
I'm sorry, something awful happened a moment ago. You're listening to Today on Radio 4 with John Humphreys and James Nocte and Peter Donaldson with the news.
Jim Nocte, who started his long stint on Today this week in 1994. Stay with the Today programme. Who's this signing off 17 years ago?
Now, here's a question. Is Anne Widdecombe to be the saviour of the Conservative Party? Almost every day this summer we've seen a savage attack on one cabinet minister or another. Is it safe for them to get back in the water?
Largely as a result of the signals that this government... No, let me finish. I can hear you about to interrupt. That this government have sent out.
I don't know whether you heard yourself being accused, Ms. Widdecombe, of being part of an incompetent shambles.
Yes, well, it is, of course, a joke. The fact is...
What's a joke?
Being accused of being an incompetent shambles. May I finish?
Yes, of course.
Thank you.
Fond clips of Sue McGregor as aired in her final appearance on the Today programme this week in 2002. So, with MPs voting at last to allow Commons proceedings on radio 44 years ago...
We won't, of course, be able to join them immediately because, first of all, we have prayers.
Radio Humberside beginning 48 years ago...
This local radio will prosper only insofar as it attracts the interest and the participation of the communities it is designed to serve.
Brian Matthews' official farewell show 2 years ago...
And I must say I've enjoyed every minute of my 27 years in this chair.
The launch of Lynx FM 27 years ago, now on the verge of new ownership.
Lynx FM, your new 24-hour radio station, begins in March.
And the first trial community radio stations in Bradford, Stoke and Havant 17 years ago. Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Thank you, David and James and Roy Martin and our guests this week, Dirk Anthony and Matthew Wright. Next time on the Radio Today programme, it's the roundtable discussion for March. Trevor Dan and guests will be here to dissect everything that's been going on over the last few weeks and some big news there's been as well. And they'll also talk about the launch of Scala Radio next week. Join us for that.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.